How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
If you confuse people, both patients and your team, too much, it's not going to become a solid part of your practice. Specialists exist to do special things. With the advancements in clear aligner therapy and short-term orthos, straight wire systems, treating a class one malocclusion is no longer a special thing, in my opinion. It should be in the toolbox of any well-versed general practice. I achieve ridiculous stuff with Invisalign and malocclusions that you always hear, oh, they need comprehensive braces with that. Honestly, I can achieve a great result with any malocclusion using Invisalign because I know how teeth work and I know the mechanics that need to happen.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists, episode number 316. My name is Andrew. Hey, everyone, I want to apologize. My voice sounds terrible. I know this is probably really hurting your ears just listening to this. This past weekend, we were at the Voices of Dentistry Conference. It was so much fun. If you haven't been, make sure you guys check it out next year. We did so much podcasting, though. We did some podcasting for this show. We did some podcasting on other people's show. So much, in fact, that I lost my voice just a little bit. So sorry about that. But in fact, you know, this is where this week's interview comes from, is from the Voice of Dentistry. You might hear a little bit of background noise as we were sitting in the conference hall recording with Dr. Matt Standridge. And we talked about orthodontics. And I feel like as a hygienist, there's a lot to learn about orthodontics. It's not that basic thing that we learn in school. So some of the things that we talked about, our job as clinicians, as we're assessing patients, what does that look like? There was a classification system that he talked about that I'd never heard of before. I'm used to the classifications that are on our little clipboards, right? Like our little cheat sheet clipboards that have like the alignment of the teeth. But he let us know about this different classification, but also, you know, the problems with the classification systems, which are things I never even thought of before. So I think one of the biggest things that I'm really excited for him to talk to you guys about and for you guys to hear is his thoughts on whether or not to use clear aligner therapy for really extreme cases. Because I remember when I was in school, and I mentioned this on the episode, is, you know, you don't do, it's for cosmetic. That's what clear aligner therapy is all about. And granted, that was more than 10 years ago, but still, like, you know, I remember that being continually kind of the thought process for hygiene is, hey, we don't do really extreme cases with clear aligner therapy. And so I'm very excited for you to listen to what he has to say about that. And so I'm really sure that you're going to love his interview. I was joined on this episode, though, by the Latina RDH, Amber Lovatos. She was also at the conference, and I really appreciate her being on. If you haven't heard, she also has a podcast called Un Cuento de Dos Higienistas, which is essentially A Tale of Two Hygienists, but in Spanish. She hosts it with her sister, and she has some really great guests on. So if you're bilingual or you have a Spanish-speaking dental professional in your office, please make sure you let them know so they can search it out. As a tip for searching it out, if you can't remember Un Cuento de Dos Higienistas, it's written in the show notes. So make sure you click on that. But you can also just search out A Tale of Two Hygienists, usually in the podcast apps, and it'll be under one of the ones that we host as well. So speaking of which, if you could all do me a favor and please hit a subscribe button for us for this show. We want to be in the top search for all the podcasts when people are looking for dental hygiene podcasts, and that would really help us a lot. And while you're hitting that button, please make sure that you rate and review us. Make sure you tell a friend. We did get a new review come through. I'll read it on next week's episode. Speaking of next week, we have another great show planned. It was a roundtable recording that focused on local anesthesia and the questions that everyone's always asking, you know, those dental groups, those forums that are online. So don't miss out on the answers that Tina and Kelly were sharing with us. And one more thing, we have a huge, huge, huge announcement coming out soon. And I really hate when people say that. And I apologize for that. I promise you, I am not leading you up to a huge letdown. But we have some ginormous news. And so please don't miss the next couple of episodes as we let you guys in on some of the things that are happening. So, okay, that's it for me. Enjoy this interview with Dr. Matt Standridge.
So we've already started the podcast, by the way. This is Dr. Matt, Standridge.
Thanks for letting us know.
Yep, no problem. And so, let's talk, doctor. So first of all, if you don't mind just giving like a little background of who you are and what you do for our listeners.
Yeah. Who's your daddy? What's he do? I graduated from UMKC in 2010. So I've been doing this for a little over a decade, and I've owned my own practice since 2012. And so, yeah, and I practice in very kind of poor rural county area of Kansas. Mm-hmm. So there's no specialists around me. I'm kind of a one-man band in our county and all that stuff. So we do a little bit of everything, anything and everything, trying to keep people healthy and keep them out of pain. And, yeah, just have a little four-op office. I run out two rooms. I have two full-time hygienists, and I do everything under the sun from endo to oral surgery to reconstructive type stuff. And like you kind of alluded to earlier, my real passion is ortho. It's about 30% of my clinical practice, of my time.
Yeah.
Not including hygiene or anything, but of my time, it's about 30% ortho. And yeah, that's what we do.
But you also educate other people. You teach other people. What do you do there?
Yeah, so I cut my teeth as far as teaching about 5 years ago in orthodontics. And I was teaching for Garrity Orthodontic Seminars, which is a comprehensive straight wire group based out of Tulsa at the time. Now they're down in Dallas. And that's where I started at teaching-wise. And since then, I've kind of grown out to start my own thing. I was teaching for Blue Sky Bio, and I still teach for them for kind of in-house clear aligner type stuff. And then last year, I joined up with Tarun Agarwal with 3D Dentist.
T-Bone.
Yep.
Shout out to T-Bone.
Shout out to T-Bone. And I am the leader of their orthodontic arm of the 3D Dentist curriculum now. And then also starting some stuff with GC Ortho with their headquarters outside of Chicago. So,
fantastic.
So, and as much as I love clinical dentistry, I have just as much satisfaction, if not more so, teaching other providers. Because out of an idea of the whole, type of abundance and expansion type of mindset, there's only so many lives that I can improve inside the walls of my
practice.
That's
the buzzword, abundance mindset.
Abundance mindset, all that stuff. Yeah, eradicating scarcity, all that stuff, right? All of these influencer type terms. Yeah. But that is true. Like, as much as I love transforming lives in my office, I know that the more lives that I transform provider-wise that then have a trickle-down effect to bringing that to their offices, it just, I don't know, there's a big sense of satisfaction out of that.
I feel like a lot of us are on that same, at least a lot of us here at Voice of Dentistry.
Any podcaster has to have that a little bit.
We feel that,
right? I mean, that's why you do this. You know, that's why you put in the hours outside of your normal 9-to-5.
Well, I think it's also a little bit of selfishness, if I'm being honest about it. It's like, you and I never would have met if we didn't have a podcast.
Right.
I would never get to have you sit in front of me and learn from you. Like, learn from all the experts in the field.
Right.
Like, like a front row seat, right? So right. It is a little bit out of selfishness.
Andrew secretly wants to be famous.
I don't want to be famous. I just want to learn all of from the famous people.
Right.
So.
There's that, too.
So you kind of learned, I guess not learned, but you really jumped into all of the subspecialties because of necessity.
Right.
Yeah? I mean, yeah. What are you going to do? Refer to out to who?
Yeah, and it's, that's especially with orthodontics because, like, I don't know, like, with the oral surgeons, if I send out to them and they're an hour drive away for, like, wisdom teeth, well, that's one appointment,
sure.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Versus orthodontics, which is an hour appointment every 3 weeks for 2 years, like, that's a lot harder sell.
That's mm-hmm. a barrier.
Yeah, it is a barrier. Starting off, I learned from Rick DePaul with his PowerPox 6 month smiles type stuff, and that's where I started at, but it opened my eyes to orthodontics. And so I would be referring kids and teenagers and stuff to the orthodontist, and I would see these kids 6 months or a year later and nothing's changes. They're not in orthodontics, nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And I'd ask mom or dad, like, well, what's going on here? And they're like, well, you know, we'd have to go back every 3 weeks for 2 years. I just can't take that much time off work. They can't miss that much time off of school and all that stuff. And it's a 2-hour round trip to do this.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so out of necessity, because being some sort of a capitalist, I look at the need of the area and is it being fulfilled or not?
Yeah.
And if not, then it's like, well, what could I do to help fulfill that need? And so that's where it really originated from. And then that was about 9 years ago, and it's just kind of grown from there.
So I have your presentation was awesome this morning.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's
always
so good.
I'm going to be fully transparent here and a little vulnerable. It's always a little bit nerve-wracking when you do a presentation for the first time. Like what I did this morning, that's the first presentation of this kind of simplified way of looking at diagnosis. Like that's the first version of that I've ever done here. So it's like, in a way, it was good because I love this meeting and it's basically like I'm speaking with friends.
Sure.
But at the same time, anytime I'm doing like a presentation that is stock new, like there's still a little bit of that pucker factor going on. Like, and just like, how's this going to go? You know, type of thing.
Does it make it worse when you say, hey, everyone who has done ortho in your office, raise your hand, and most of the room has raised their hand?
Right.
Does that make you a little
pressure.
More nervous? Yeah, it's like.
Well, a little bit, but at the same time, I've run around in the ortho circles enough that I knew that still a decent amount of what I was teaching, unless if they really went down a deep dive rabbit hole of ortho education, is still going to be new to them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care how well-versed you think you are in Invisalign or SureSmile or 6 month smiles or whatever, unless if you actually read this stuff yourself, you probably don't know it.
Yeah.
And so I had a little bit of comfort with that. But like I said, running through anything new for the first time is still a little bit of a...
Well, it came off of as very polished. So
I appreciate that.
But I'm also a novice for all of this stuff. So you could have fooled me no matter what. So so what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, I have a sheet here, lots of different questions about lots of different things. It's going to be jumping around. It's not going to be nearly... And for the audience listening, look, this isn't going to be a comprehensive discussion on everything you need to know as a hygienist for ortho, as a team member for ortho, or even a doctor if you're listening. It's not going to be comprehensive in that way. But I want to put nuggets in your head of things to think about because one of the things we're going to tackle in a minute is the standard classifications that we were taught, class one, class two, and then what you were saying was completely different. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah, so that's the thing is like, well, so talk to me a little bit from the hygienist standpoint, because I mainly talk with doctors.
Sure.
Talk with me a little bit about from a hygienist standpoint as far as what your guys' teaching and understanding is of malocclusion and class one, class two, class three, all that stuff.
Very, very basic. And then you fix me if I'm also saying things wrong, but it was very much, okay, so we know where class one is, so we do canine and molar relationship is all we do.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't even necessarily standard in all practices, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of practices, they're like, okay, doctor's got it, we're going to just do this. So we, if we do it, we do it. If we don't, we don't.
Okay.
We look at crowding. We look at, but we don't really, there's no classifications for crowning. Either they have it mild, moderate, severe.
Okay.
You know, you look at overbite, now, overjet.
Let me pause you for a second on that mild, moderate, severe. Do you have an objective way of looking?
There's no millimeters. There's no,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
And it depends on your software, obviously, yeah. Too. And it depends on, like, your practice. But, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's, like, it's so basic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be super honest. Like, yeah, in hygiene school, I went to a dental school that was in a hygiene program in a dental school.
Right.
Right. So we took anatomy with the dental students.
Mm-hmm.
And so we learned occlusion. And in hygiene school, like, we did measurements and whatever. I haven't done that since I graduated 8 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean it's that's the truth.
It's 1, 2, 3. Like, that's all we know. But then, like, when you were talking earlier, and you're like, hold on, a class one's not really a class one, especially if it's rotated in a certain way. And I'm like, wait. And then you had, there's qualifiers that we need to know.
Uh-huh.
Can you go over some of these things?
Yeah. So, you know, if you, you know, quiz dentists, line them up, 9 times out of 10, their definition of a class one occlusion is going to be the mesial buccal cusp of the upper first molar is in the central groove of the lower first molar, right? Like, and is that what you guys basically learned?
Yep.
Like,
I'm
if you took your hygiene
occlusion.
Boards, what's that?
I'm going to have y'all check my occlusion because I don't have maxillary canines or mandibular first molars.
Do you
so
not?
We can,
okay, give me this
file
here.
No.
Anyways, so, like, if you ask most people in the dental world what a class one occlusion is, that would be their rote memory textbook answer,
yep.
Right? But as I talked about in my presentation, if you do a deeper dive of that, that's pretty misleading. To me, there's a lot better of key indicators to really detect what is a class one occlusion, because there are rotations that happen with that molar. And I showed those pictures of that and a scan of when I was doing a workup, and I was like, see, that's perfect. When I was doing my analysis, and that mesial buccal cusp is in that central groove, but it is not a class one. And because that molar was so distally rotated, so that mesial buccal cusp is in that central groove, but that's because of the rotation that's happening in that molar.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to me all the time. It happens to my students. And it happened to me when I first started with orthodontics, and I was starting with straight wire.
Mm.
So you bracket or band these molars, you run straight wires, and it derotates that molar that I had labeled class one. Now, all of a sudden, as it derotates, all of a sudden that molar is class two, and I'm crapping myself, like, what did I do wrong? Because I marked this thing as a class one case, and now all of a sudden it's class two, and I messed up. It's like, well, no, mechanically I didn't mess up. Diagnostically, I messed up, because a true class one case, this molar, it's not only that mesial buccal cusp is in that central groove, but there's also no rotations in that molar.
Yeah.
In a derotated molar, in a straight line molar, not only is that mesial buccal cusp in that central groove, but that distal buccal cusp is also hitting that mesial ridge of the second molar, meaning there's no rotation going on. And then also the premolar in front of it is in that embrasure between that molar and that premolar.
Yeah.
And that's why I think cuspids and premolars are more indicative of a class one, class two, class three when your screening case is chair side.
Mm-hmm.
Those are more reliable reference points compared to just looking at molar occlusion if you're classifying something as, quote, class one. Does that make sense?
So can I ask kind of, maybe it might be a little bit of a dumb question, but okay, so you go through this thing, class one, you find out later on it's class two.
Right.
How does that change your treatment planning?
So it really depends on what your end goals are, because the way that I do it is I break up my orthodontic parameters between cosmetic-driven and comprehensive-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmetic-driven is basically straight front teeth, nice smile, that's about it.
Yeah.
We're not looking for perfect posterior occlusion or coupling or any of that. And so each one of those is going to have different codes and different fees attached to them. And I do global fees. So that includes records, that includes orthodontic treatment, that includes retainers at the end, all of that stuff. I'm a big believer in global fees.
I like that idea. Today was the first day I heard about that.
Yeah.
And I think Dr. Patel was talking about global fees for
implants.
Yes,
Mona Patel
right?
was talking about it with implants. And I thought that was a perfect segue because I do the exact same thing with orthodontics.
Yeah. So can you explain that global to fees. Us who don't know?
Oh, sorry. So I mean, yeah, no, that
dumb
that
it down for
why
us.
You weren't in there on the yeah.
That's a perfect
no,
question.
Oopsies.
That's a perfect question. Do you want to take it, Andrew?
I mean, I can try. I'll do my best. You fix me.
All right.
So the idea is presenting the patient one fee that is inclusive of every little bracket item below it. So
bingo.
Rather than just saying, okay, so for your records, it's going to cost, you know, $25. Mm-hmm. And then for your pano, it's going to be this and this. And this. That's probably a little bit overwhelming for a patient to be like, then they're going to line item it and be like, well, actually, doctor, I want you to skip this step right here because I don't want to pay that fee.
Bingo.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just easier for Trinix.
And that, at the end of the day, it's getting away from line item a la carte stuff and just be like, for your five-course meal, it is X amount of dollars. Like, that is it. And simplifying it for the team, simplifying it for the patient.
Yeah. As a patient, I would say I would appreciate that more so that I know what to expect. Like, my issue with going to some places that are, like a la carte, is like, oh, I don't know what added fee they're going to add to this. They're telling me my appointment is just like this much.
Bingo.
But really, it's a whole lot more.
And I got a question from a student earlier today about that, was that, you know, with the a la carte fee, say, for example, and I'm going to give my fees because I'm transparent. I really don't care. My cosmetic fee, my cutoff for that, like for aligners, for example, is 20 aligners or less. My fee for that is $4,000. I should say 20 aligners per arch. So it can be up to 20 aligners up top, up to 20 aligners on the bottom if I'm doing Invisalign or in-house or whatever.
Yeah.
So my global fee is $4,000. Mm-hmm. And that includes the records, that includes the aligners, that includes the retainers at the end, all of that stuff, right? For most comprehensive cases, it's $5,800. Okay. And so by simplifying it like that, it's easier for me, it's easier for my patients, and it's easier for my team. Because if my team has all this stuff like, oh, do I need to add a CBCT to this? Do I need to add extra retainers to this?
Right.
Is there a fibrotomy fee if we need to, like, or an enamelplasty fee to, like, reshape enamel after... If you muddy the waters that much, it's not going to be simple enough to be applicable. You know, if you confuse people, both patients and your team, too much, it's not going to become a solid part of your practice.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I guess my question though is, if you are you not submitting to insurance, or are you also submitting to insurance, and what portion of that gets submitted for their $1,000 or whatever that they have for coverage?
So that's an excellent question. So my global fee is built into the main code.
So like a macro code, and then...
Right. So like for ortho, for example, they have... interoceptive treatment of adolescent dentition. They have comprehensive treatment of adolescent dentition. Interoceptive of adult. Adolescent of adult. Blah, 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 blah. My global fee is built into that, and it's not necessarily inclusive of retainers and stuff like that. Because I'm just going to focus on my global fee of the main procedure. Mm-hmm. And then, like I was saying earlier, a student of mine is just like, so... if a aligner case is 14 aligners per arch versus 20 aligners per arch, you're not messing with the fee between those.
Right.
And I'm like, correct. Because there are some cases that I will take less time and have more profit on. There will be some cases that I take more time and less profit on. But at the end of the day, it averages out. It's a wash.
And also, it's
applicable.
The thing I like about this is, like, you're not punishing people for having more jacked up teeth.
Right.
Or giving them why do they deserve to pay less because their teeth are less jacked up? Like, it's not... I just don't think that's fair to
But
do
I think
that, but.
Then it also gives you the opportunity to give equal care to everybody. There is no, like, this patient paid less, so that I'm going to give them less time in the chair. You're going to give that patient the time that they need with you. doesn't matter because everybody's paid the same thing.
And at the end of the day, I mean, we could look at things from a zero-sum kind of profit and loss statement, or we can look at how do we treat people well and treat them efficiently and effectively and compassionately. But at the same time, we still have to make it make sense business-wise and overhead and all that stuff.
Sure.
So that's the way that I, myself, have settled on. I don't know if that's the right answer, but, like, it seems to be doing pretty well. So, like, and people really resonate with it. So.
And I think with patients, they talk to other people in the community, and they'll ask them, like, hey, how much was your ortho? And so then the patients then kind of already know, like, if you're referring somebody, they're going to get the same thing. There's no like, oh, why did that person get to pay less?
It's like, I'm like, why am I paying $20 more? Like,
exactly. What's the difference? And they might not understand the nuances of dentistry, why a case might be more complicated than another. There might
be
something they can't see, right?
Yep. Exactly.
So, doctor, earlier you mentioned, do you feel like all offices should be providing ortho?
Maybe this is my personal bias because I quote-unquote sell continuing education to
Sure. Yeah, that's
so like, every GP should be able to do ortho and you should take my course.
Sure.
You know, but from a practicality standpoint, I do. Okay, so the ADA itself has estimated that 75% of the adult population suffers from some sort of malocclusion.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm sorry, but if we truly treated all 70% of the adult population, there's not enough orthodontists to go around to treat that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so there's from that standpoint, but also I also believe, as far as specialists goes, that, and I love specialists, don't get me wrong, but, like, specialists exist to do special things. With the advancements in clear aligner therapy and short-term orthos, straight wire systems, treating a class one malocclusion is no longer a special thing, in my opinion.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
It should be in the toolbox of any well-versed general practice.
Sure. Sure, that makes sense.
And from hygienist standpoint, are lower incisors that are straight, are they easier to clean than severely crowded 100%. Incisors?
Obviously. I mean, and you're going to see lower disease rates for perio, I mean, and less caries if they're straighter too.
Yeah, but I think another point is that obviously we care about accessibility, right? We want access to care.
Right.
And patients are going to go to where it's easier for them to get care. And we obviously don't want them getting, you know, I don't know, do-it-yourself ortho, right? You want to
do you
make
name drop a brand that you hate so much on this podcast?
I would never do that. Don't come after me. I don't have any money.
You know they would, too.
They really would. But y'all know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. If your patient already comes to your practice and then you have these services you can offer them and you show them, like, how affordable and how accessible it is, they're more likely to get that treatment under the supervision of a dentist, which they should be supervised by a dentist.
Bingo. And that's the thing. In my practice, over half of the orthodontics that I suggest, it's teed up and it's quote-unquote sold, even though that's, like, a naughty term, right?
Sure. Supposedly.
But it is packaged in the name of health. It's not so much aesthetic driven because the position of teeth for occlusion, through cleansability, through all of this stuff, through periodontal support and, you know, all of that, that to me, quote unquote, sells more cases than, like, have you ever thought about straightening your teeth? Versus my hygienist, they bring up, it's like, you deposit a lot of calculus around these lower incisors. And how easy is it for you to clean around those? And they're like, yeah, not very, and all that stuff. It's like, well, is that a concern for you? Would you like to look at options as far as maybe as rounding things out and making things more cleansable and all that stuff? And also, you know, as a byproduct, straightening these teeth. And they're like, yeah, I'm interested. I didn't know you guys had any options for that.
I
thought I was too
old.
I thought I was too, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right?
Yeah.
And that's actually how I prefer to open the conversation versus the whole, like, 80s questionnaire, like, if you could rate your smile from 1 to 10.
Are you happy with your smile? Blah.
Yeah, how happy are you with your smile? Yeah.
And what would it take to fix your smile? It's always straighter and wider, right?
Yeah.
That's always the answer.
And those things matter, too. And also, like, coming from a, like, public health standpoint, from a public health clinic, like, those things matter, too. I have patients who, they come in, they want whitening. Right. They want straight teeth, too.
Right.
Right? Like, your smile, your appearance matters. That helps, yes, with self-esteem. That helps with, like, mm-hmm, getting jobs and going out and doing the things that you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Next question. Ready, okay, for this?
Do it.
One thing that we hear quite a bit is, you know, patient went through ortho, then they come back with TMJ issues.
Ooh, nice.
So explain to me, is that, first of all, true? Is there any truth to that?
Okay.
And then also, if it is true, how does that come about?
Okay. So TMJ issues, me, myself, personally, I've never had a TMJ issue arise post-ortho. I'm sure it happens. Mm-hmm. Now, if it happens to me, and this is just my personal take on things, so don't take it out, you know, on your host here. But, like, to me, if that happens, then something was missed on the front end diagnostically.
Okay.
Okay. So, like, how I teach my students is a very detailed screening process. And one of them is TMJ. I've never had one get worse. Okay. I've had people stay the same. I've had people get a lot better.
Okay.
But I've never had one get worse.
But they don't all of a sudden develop popping and clicking, you
right,
know, that kind of stuff.
Right. I've had plenty of folks that had pre-existing popping and clicking that it still happened. But in those cases, I never, like, promised that it would get better.
Yeah.
I said, hey, this is already happening. It's probably still going to happen, but your teeth are going to be straight and you're going to have a better bite.
Yeah.
And then there have been plenty of times where they had tension headaches and all of that stuff. And in 3 months worth of treatment, those went away.
Nice.
And 5 years later, have still been fine.
Yeah.
So they sing my praises. But I've never had an issue where they were completely asymptomatic and never had any clicking or popping or whatever, and then all of a sudden started developing clicking or popping.
Have you had that?
I have not had that happen.
Have patients mentioned that to you, or is this the first time you're hearing of that particular concern?
I feel like I kind of have, but we don't do a lot of ortho in, like,
our... Well, I mean, it's not even, like, my ortho patients.
Yeah,
it's like
just people who are referred back.
The 28-year-old that comes in, she's like, you know, happened ever since I, you know, went through ortho. And I'm like, I don't know that's related,
okay, so
but it's
I work in, like, public health, right? And so a lot of my patients, we don't offer ortho, and they can't afford it. So they just go without. So the majority of our patients that I'm seeing is the first time they've been to a dentist.
So here's the thing, and this is a little bit anecdotal on my part, but, like, because I started off in dentistry in public health. I worked public health for 3 years before starting my own practice, right? So if you don't know, and if you're not screening, and if you're not really, like, screening and diagnosing the patient on the front end for these things, they could have pre-existing conditions, but they don't really know, and you don't know unless if you're specifically looking for them. Does that make sense?
That's true. I think, for
sure. That's me just kind of haphazardly waxing philosophical about this, but that, like, intuitively, that's what it makes me think is going on. Unless if you're trying to do crazy ortho mechanics where you're literally, like, trying to bring their lower jaw forward through crazy class 2 elastics and whatever.
Yeah.
But unless if you're really doing some pretty wild stuff, the likelihood of creating TMJ from out of thin air is pretty minimal.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Good. I like that answer. Thank you. You mentioned a lot about airway issues, and you talked a little bit about, like, you know, signs and symptoms, things that you're looking for. You mentioned a couple of times even you're like, okay, then they're going to have a vaulted palate and this. Like, what's the typical facial structure of someone who's going to have airway issues?
Yeah. So one of the first things I look for, I talked about in my presentation about kind of systemizing the way that we look at things. So I look at front, right, left, upper, lower, you know, I talked about that quite a bit. And so front, one of the first things I look at is when they smile and I just kind of just grimace, like eyes squinted, biggest you know, grin that they can give. How narrow is their smile and how much buccal tissue are they showing, right? So, well, like, when I smile, it's pretty narrow. And so that's one of the first things that I look at, because I actually have a YouTube video. I forget the name of it. It's called, like, the cheapest airway screener in the world or something like that.
Yeah.
But basically, there was some studies done by Jim McNamara out of the University of Michigan, I believe it was, that anthropologically we look at things of, like, how developed an arch should be. And so inner molar distance, so if you measured the distance between number 3 and number 14 from the lingual surfaces of each, they should be, in adults, 36 millimeters or more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Do you know what you have clinically in your everyday practice, in every patient that sits in your chair? Do you know what we have that's literally 36 millimeters in width?
No.
I don't.
A cotton roll.
Oh.
Really?
A standard.
We're going to go stick cotton rolls in our mouth after this.
Oh, my gosh.
A standard cotton roll is literally 36 millimeters in length. So if you want to screen a patient on if they're constricted or not, literally take, with cotton forceps, a cotton roll and see if it fits passively intermolar in their palate.
Interesting.
And if it's bunching up, they're constricted. Boom, roasted.
Okay.
And
so, treating my entire family and myself after this.
I'm 32 millimeters myself. So I get it. Like, yeah. I totally do.
So what are you gonna do? What can you do about that? Now, you can't, from what I understand, you can't widen your palate at
to
that point.
A point, you can. You can lateral development, because I talked about in my course or my class this morning, I talked about lateral development versus true expansion.
Right.
Right. So if you have molars and all that stuff that are literally just rolled in, you can develop those arches and you can get development that way. Versus, so like, say, for example, and for the audience at home, you can't quite see my hand gestures here, but say I have molars that are leaning in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And those are 32 millimeters. I could expand those and possibly laterally develop those, upright those, and get to that 36 and be okay because they are in an upright position now versus rolled in.
Right.
Compared to if they're already upright, but they're 32 millimeters, getting this is going to be a lot harder. Getting that true upright.
Impossible or just harder?
Harder.
So what do they do for something like that?
I mean, so for adults, for adults, my favorite thing is MSE, mini screw assisted expansion, where it's like
sounds terrible.
I know
standard
it does.
Expansion. It's really not bad.
It's not sure. It just screws in your mouth. Not that bad.
Says the 33 millimeter arch over here, or whatever he said.
But like, there's Sarpy, there's Marpy, there's MSE, there's all this type of adduct expansion type stuff that's available for those people that are truly constricted. They're already upright. They can't benefit from just tipping the teeth and making them upright. They're already upright, but they're still constricted.
Yeah.
That is where more adjunct expansion therapies are going to be worn.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. You good on that one? Okay.
I'm just here for commentary. Do you have any questions?
All right. So I think there's probably too many questions, but I want to talk probably two more topics.
Okay.
I want to talk about gaining space.
Yeah.
So I think this is something I don't think hygienists ever talk about. We never learn about if there's crowding, what do you do to get the space to make the room without extracting a tooth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one of the most fundamental things that I try to teach on, because, you know, I kind of jokingly say, but there's a lot of truth to it in my presentation, is that I'm nobody special on this. I'm not some super genius about this stuff. It's just I tried to simplify things out of necessity because I myself needed simple to make it applicable.
Mm-hmm.
then my team also needed simple, my patients right. needed simple, that type of stuff. So when I look at things, I look at five ways to develop an arch and gain space. And three of those are through tooth position, and two of the five are dealing with actual tooth morphology themselves. Mm-hmm. And so when I teach my students, I talk about proclination, a.k.a. bringing front teeth forward. Number two is lateral development. Some people call it expansion, but when we're dealing with adult ortho, expansion is kind of a misnomer, because unless if you're doing crazy surgical expansion or mini screw assisted expansion, expansion to me is literally widening the palate and widening that suture.
Right.
Other than that, to me, it's literally just lateral development.
Yeah.
That's how I describe it. So we talk about proclination, moving front teeth forward. We talk about lateral development, moving side teeth, canines, premolars, molars, laterally developing those and increasing more width that way. And then the third way to develop arch length is distalization. If your molars, if these back teeth are too far mesial, too far forward, you literally push them backwards. You distalize them. That is a harder mechanic.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot more nuance and a lot more training to do. But it's, for someone like me who does a lot of ortho, I do that all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily a good place to start off with.
Sure.
But those are three ways through truth position that we can gain space to unravel teeth.
Mm-hmm.
The other two out of the five are dealing with tooth morphology, the literal shape and size of the teeth. And one of those is going to be well-versed with most people, and that's IPR, interproximal reduction. So we're literally skinning up the teeth. We are literally reducing the mesial distal width of those teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're reducing friction points and all that stuff so the teeth can derotate and unravel a little bit easier. But most of the time, we're literally reducing the mesial distal width of the teeth. It's like, you know, if you have X amount of people, so say you have five people in an elevator, and each one of those people are 400 pounds, versus if you skinny up those people and they're now 200 pounds.
Is this where the keto comes in?
What's that?
Is this where the keto part comes in?
How many more people can we fit in that elevator, or
right,
how much
right.
more comfortable they can be, you know, and not be shoulder to shoulder? You know, it's literally taking up less mass and less volume, so that way we can create space.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fifth way is literally taking out teeth, extraction orthodontics. That's why I stay away from, but that is literally the fifth way of gaining space. Now, depending on where a person is at in their orthodontic journey, I'm going to recommend that we focus on three of those five. I'm going to be focusing on proclination, if you can procline teeth, and that's what I talked about today, was really screening these patients to understand what to look out for on the front end. But basically, the three mechanics starting out is proclination, lateral development, and IPR.
Mm-hmm.
Distalization and extraction are still on the table, but that takes a lot more training to do.
Yeah.
And that's not really good for the novice or intermediate. Does that make
sense?
I
feel like it used to be really popular, though, right? Like, it was just like, okay, we're going to take out, you know, your premolars and we're going to call it good.
That's still the standard of care for, at least in my area, for most orthodontists.
Now, is that because that's their training was for forever ago?
Right. Well, there's that.
Are they newer?
And this is probably going to get me in trouble, but I really don't care.
It's a hygiene podcast. Doctors aren't listening to this. You're fine.
So, to me, because I'm so versed in the sleep apnea and sleep disorder breathing and all that stuff, I'm pretty against extraction orthodontics. I've done extraction orthodontics, but it's literally less than 5% of my cases.
Yeah.
95% of the time I'm doing non-extraction orthodontics. Mm-hmm. And so that's my personal bias, and that's the parameter of which I present mm-hmm. this information from, mm-hmm. right?
So it's interesting. I obviously listen to TikTok doctors, you know, because that's where you get the best
that's
information.
That's truth right there, right?
So there's this TikTok doctor, large following. It's actually a Spanish-speaking TikTok doctor, which is obviously why I would follow. But anyways, he said that he's against not extracting teeth because then you end up looking like a horse.
So he's against non-extraction because you're going to be too full.
Yeah.
Right. And I hear that from the extraction camps. It's like, oh, well, if you don't extract in this case, they're going to look like a monkey. Like, they're just going to be too full. They're going to look like a baboon. That's what I always hear. And it's like, well, that goes back to the diagnosis that I was talking about earlier. Say, for example, if we truly learn what a class two is, right?
Right.
So if you take a class two, that their mesiobuccal cusp is in that lower central groove because that tooth is rotated distally, and you derotate that, and all of a sudden they're a half step class two, and you treat that non-extraction, they can look pretty dang full. They can look pretty toothy, unless if you do anterior posterior correction. Any time that a quote-unquote non-extraction orthodontics looks too toothy is because they tried to do it without doing true anterior posterior correction. Any time that you take the time to literally move those back teeth where they need to be, it never looks toothy. It has yet to happen in 10 years of my practice.
Yeah.
See, that's why I appreciate these conversations, right? Because, like, we hear all these things on, like, social media. And to have a true conversation and talking about these questions, these things that come up that our patients are hearing, right?
Right.
And that we should have an answer for because they're going to come to us with these questions.
Right.
All right, last one. Here we go. This is the kicker. You know, I think when I was in school, it was clear aligner therapy is good for, you know, I guess very, very cosmetic, very little rotation, very little anything. Let's fix it. But then in the case that I saw earlier today by, was it Dr. Fryer?
Oh, Kevin Fryer, yeah.
Yeah, so that case was, and for the listeners at home, one of the worst malocclusion cases I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Crowding.
Cross bites.
Everywhere. And it was, the end result was fantastic without all of the, we're always told there's going to be so much recession, there's going to be so much all this stuff that happens.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, like, so we are at that point now that we can do that, or is that just a unicorn case?
That is a case that is very predictable as long as you know what the F you're doing.
Yeah.
That is, and that to me is what's different. And that's the thing why I show that case is because I don't want to just show cases of mine and be on a pedestal of be like, oh, look how great I am, and look how much what we've done. Like, I want to show cases of other people, too. Be like, I'm not a unicorn. I'm not special. As long as you know what you're doing, these are the type of results that are achievable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that thing, he understood what he could achieve with proclination. He understood what he could do with lateral development. He understood where his incisor angles were, where he was protrusive versus where he was inclined, where he could use proclination, all that stuff. He understood that and applied that using a system like Invisalign, which is clear aligners, which you look at that case and that's not like a simple case.
Right.
Right?
It was crazy.
He achieved that with Invisalign. I achieve ridiculous stuff with Invisalign and malocclusions that you always hear, oh, they need comprehensive braces like with that. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I can achieve a great result with any malocclusion using Invisalign because I know how teeth work and I know the mechanics that need to happen. As long as their compliance is going to be there.
Oh, for sure.
That's the biggest differential for me with Invisalign is what is this patient's compliance going to be? I showed on my Facebook, I don't know if you guys saw, on my Facebook, I showed this crazy high canine case where high canine, half step, midline was completely off, blah, 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 blah. And the final results are awesome. Midline is on point. Canine is down. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I did that straight wire because I'm dealing with a 13-year-old little.
Yeah.
And that is not going to wear their aligners.
Yeah.
So I did it straight wire because I knew compliance wasn't going to
force
be
them
there.
Into compliance.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's not
through metal.
It's not a matter of if aligners will work. Aligners, I can do a lot of stuff with aligners as long as you know the mechanics, but then also you take in the patient cooperation,
the demeanor
and all that stuff,
which I did have written down. We skipped over that one particularly with attitude and demeanor. And Doctor, we're going to have you come back on again because we're running out of time. And gosh, this has been a lot of information. If anyone wanted to, so hygienists, if you want your doctors to be doing more ortho, where can they send their doctors or where can they take courses themselves from you?
Yeah, so I'm pretty easy to find on the interwebs. Matthew Standridge on Facebook, Dr. Matthew Standridge on Instagram. I have a Facebook teaching page, Matthew Standridge DDS FAGD. Anyone who wants to reach out to me directly, my email is drmatt, drmatt, at yatescenterdental.com. That's my practice name, you know, plus my Dr. Matt at. But, yeah, I am happy to help anybody out. This is, like I said, outside of just transforming smiles and stuff in my practice, this is my second favorite way of kind of giving back. I'm happy to do it.
So everyone, we'll have that in the show notes. Make sure you check it out. Send your doctors, send team members or whoever. Thank you, doctor, for being on. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys.